Session number 10159, Reel 2.
Group Captain Dundas, Reel 2.
The battle, of course, petered out then, and we settled down at Curtin Lindsay for the winter and were reduced to what was called a C squadron, which meant that we were really used to as a sort of training ground for new pilots coming out of OTU, who were then posted on down to the squadrons in the south. And we had that rather thankless and unglamorous job from right through until the end of the year and sort of January of 1941 when we got ready to go down south again, which we did in February when we went down to Tanglia.
You mentioned Douglas Bader. Did you get to know him very well?
I got to know Douglas Bader very well, because he came to Tanglia as a wing leader, and the wing leaders was a new position which was invented in early 1941, and he went there. Group Captain Woodall, who had been the station commander at Duxford and had controlled the big wing himself, was station commander at Tangmere, and so we had the old team again, really. But anyway, Douglas decided to keep his aeroplane with our squadron, 616, and he kept it in B flight, which was the flight I was with. At least I think it was B flight. And once or twice I flew with him on sort of practice sorties, and he was a chap who liked to have somebody he knew with him, and in fact I flew beside him all the way through 1941 until the day when he didn't come back. We did I think it was 61 sweeps over sorties over France together during the course of that spring and summer. So and of course I spent a lot of time with him on the ground too, and his wife Thelma was a very dear friend, and also his Thelma's half sister Jill, who subsequently married my great friend Laddie Lucas. And we were all very close.
Did Bader ever discuss with you this controversy that took place about the right kind of tactics to employ during the Battle of Britain?
Well, you mean the big wing?
Yes.
I suppose he did a bit, but it wasn't something which we talked about much. We were more interested in the tactics we were employing over France. I think that big wing controversy has been picked over often enough, and I certainly don't want to get involved in that. I'd rather not, really.
What do you think about the tactics which the Luftwaffe employed in the Battle of Britain?
Well, I think that first of all that they came damn close to doing what they set out to do. If they'd been allowed to continue with the bombing of the airfields, I think they might have done it. But I think you'll find, if you look at the history books, that that Hitler himself intervened because of the bombing by Bomber Command of the German cities at night, and I believe Berlin. I'm speaking completely from memory now, and I don't mean memory from that time, but of the history that one has read of it. I think that Hitler himself instructed his Air Force commanders, and primarily Goering, of course, to switch the attack to London. And I think you will find, if you look back at the definitive histories of the Battle of Britain, that they came pretty close to success at one point, but then by switching to London, really the point and purpose of what they were doing was diverted from near success to something else. And I think possibly that was the turning point.
When you went up to intercept a group of German raiders, what kind of tactics would you normally adopt?
Well, I'm not in a very good position to talk about that, because the first time we went up to intercept German raiders in the Battle of Britain, I mean, if not counting that occasion over the North Sea, which was something different again, all that happened was that I got shot down by something I didn't even see. In the big wing business, we were flying as a wing, the three squadrons of Hurricanes below and the two squadrons of Spitfires above, and we weren't adopting any particular tactics. If we intercepted, you know, if we got into contact, we just broke up and fought. I think it was as simple as that, really. I think that Keith Park adopted the only tactics which he could adopt, which was to get his squadrons up as quickly as possible and as high as possible, and so that when they finally were brought together, they were in the best position he could get them into. But it was damn difficult for him and his controllers to organize that with the smallness of the force at his disposal, and he just had to get them off the ground and up as quick as he could.
Did you find that very inexperienced British pilots were being sent up who had only just really learned how to fly a plane, and then only lasting one or two sorties?
Well, of course, they hadn't only just learned how to fly a plane. I mean, nobody would have done less than, I suppose, probably 150 hours or something like that, or between 100 and 150 hours by the time they got into a squadron. So they could fly an aeroplane all right, but we were terribly inexperienced. I reckon that the great thing was to survive your first being time you were shot down. If you did that, you got what the equivalent of what today is called street sense. You didn't. It's like a dog that runs across the road. You know, it doesn't. It's a bit more careful next time. And it really, I think, I've always thought, looking back on it, the reason why I was still there 5.5 years later, flying practically the whole time, was that I survived something which I was bloody lucky to survive, and very nearly didn't. Mind you, and I was shot down again, sort of fairly early on in 1941. So that was and survived that too. I discovered later on that I was shot down by Mulders. At least I'm told I was, by the chap who wrote a book called A Harvest of Messerschmitts, and he wrote and asked me something about Hawkins, and had I got anything to tell him about Hawkins, and I told him about the time that Douglas Bader and myself and the CO of 610 Squadron at Tangmere and number 2 went off to experiment with the finger 4 formation. We'd been flying in line astern, and we'd been talking about it in the mess the previous evening, and the next morning Douglas said, well, he thought that it was worth trying, and I'd go with him, and he'd get Paddy Woodhouse and get a number two, and we'd go and fly down the Pas de Calais and see whether we couldn't find something. And it worked like an absolute charm. And the only thing was that when we saw them coming, and when we broke, something was still behind us when we straightened out again, and I got shot again, and succeeded in forced landing at Hawkinge, which is the reason why this chap wrote to me, and I wrote back, and he said that there was only one operational report or battle report filed that day by the Germans, and that was by Mulders, who was shooting down one Spitfire over Dover at the time that I bought it. So I suppose if one's going to be shot down by anybody, it might as well be shot down by Mulders. Anyway, I'm getting away from the point. The point I'm making is, and really it's in response to your question about inexperienced pilots, is that you needed to be lucky first time, because very few people didn't get shot up once or twice. I believe that my great friend Johnny Johnson, who was with us in 616, he joined us really at the very end of the Battle of Britain after we were up at Leckenfield, or he may have joined just after the squadron left Kenley, but was with us all the way through 1941, and we were great friends, and he was a marvelous fighter pilot. As you know, he was the best, really, in the end. I don't believe he was ever hit, which is amazing. But it's very unusual.
What about the sense of history in the Battle of Britain? Were you conscious of making history? This was a great historical event?
I don't think so. Not until Mr. Churchill, as he then was, made his great speech about the few. But of course, that was during the course of the battle, and so we all puffed our chests out a bit then and thought how important we were. But until then, I don't think we'd thought about it particularly.
But were you aware? Were you conscious of the fact that it depended on you whether or not Britain would be invaded?
Yes, I think we all realized that what was going on, certainly. I mean, I think we realized that after Dunkirk. Everybody did, you know, or not everybody, but a lot of people. If you cast your mind, your memory, I cast my own memory back to those days in June 1940. My family lived up in Yorkshire. And even there, far away from the Channel, there was constant preparations taking place then. People, you know, cutting down trees and putting them in fields and taking all the signs down in the little by roads and all roads. There was a real feeling in the country that invasion was likely. And after all, we'd seen what had happened in Poland and France and Holland and Belgium. There wasn't much doubt about what we were up to in anybody's mind.
Did you get much support from the public during the Battle of Britain, or did you not have much contact with them?
Oh, I think we were conscious of tremendous support in a sort of moral sense, yes, absolutely.
You mentioned Winston Churchill paying that visit to your airfield. What kind of impression did he make?
I can't say, really. The sort of impression one would have expected him to make, I think.
Can you say what you think are the qualities necessary for a fighter pilot?
Well, to be a good fighter pilot, which I don't think I ever was, really, First of all, you can't be a really successful fighter pilot unless you're a very good shot. The good fighter pilots were very courageous. You've got to get stuck in, you know, no holding back really. But at the same time, as well as being aggressive, you just had to be careful. And you may think that that's a complete paradox, but you've got to be, I think I use the expression streetwise. You know, while being aggressive, you also had to try and survive. And you got wise about how to do that.
What about eyesight? How good did your eyesight have to be in
those? I think it had to be very good. I think some people were sort of considered to have extraordinary eyesight, but I don't know whether that's true or not. But all of us had to have a perfect eyesight, really. You had to have quick reactions. You had to be a good pilot, because you've got to be able to handle your aeroplane. So it was a whole collection of qualities, really.
What about the question of the ability to work in a team, or somebody who was a bit of a maverick and liked to go his own way?
Well, it was very helpful and desirable to be able to work in a team, but not everybody could. It's not to criticize them, but some people just weren't made that way. But one of the things I learned from Douglas Bader was the importance of teamwork and mutual support. And he was a very good wing leader. We always used to fly in three squadrons over France, go out in three squadrons. We didn't come back in three squadrons as a rule, at least certainly not if we became involved, which very often one did in that summer. But although he was tremendously aggressive, he was also very, very skilled and determined about bringing the wing into the right position in the right way and the right conditions, and then right up to the moment of engagement, more or less directing who was going to do what. And I tried to stick to that all through the rest of the war, and when I was a wing leader myself, sometimes I think people thought that I was sort of overdid it a bit. I can think of some people who always just, you know, wanted to tear off, and as soon as they saw something, whereas it was not a bad idea just to have a look, you know, and decide first of all whether it's right to take the whole squadron to attack something which you see there. There were sort of decoys and things of that kind used to, and there was, you needed a little bit of brain as well as just aggression.